You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Carolyn Sherlock, and this is the Boat Galley. Today, I'd like to go back to the topic of looking at boats. If you're looking at boats for the first time, one of the many questions you're probably asking is what to look for in the galley. In some ways, it's an impossible question to answer. Features that might be necessary on a 45-foot boat that's going to be used for extensive cruising would be totally impractical on a 25-footer that's going to be used for overnight and weekend trips. But as I've been asked this question numerous times, I've come to the conclusion that the primary consideration should be on three aspects of the basic layout and configuration. These three are all things that would be either expensive or impractical to change and will make a huge impact on your satisfaction or frustration with the boat. And there are three that if you haven't had a boat before, you might not think about. I know that I didn't until I encountered boats that had serious flaws in each of these. Regardless of the size boat and your cruising gowns, these are things that I look at first. I'm not saying there aren't other important considerations, but if a boat doesn't do well on these three, I'm not going to look any further at it unless I was planning to gut the interior. The first item, can the cook be thrown across the boat? While there are many features of a galley that contribute to the safety of a cook, most are relatively easy and inexpensive to remedy. However, if the basic layout allows the cook to be thrown 6 feet across the galley in rough weather, or if a boat with a large wake passes nearby, it's a real problem. I learned this the hard way. The first offshore passage I ever did was on a Saga 43. We ended up in a gale off New Jersey, and I was tossed as I tried to get a box of crackers out for us to eat. When the boat rolled, there was just nothing to brace myself against. While you do need an opening to get in and out of the galley, keeping that opening small and with something at least hip high, no more than about 4 feet away, 3 is even better, will limit the chances for serious injury. Depending on the size of the boat, this doesn't have to result in a tiny galley. You just don't want one with a lot of empty floor space from side to side. The second consideration, plenty of ventilation. The good thing about buying an older boat is that they usually have good ventilation. Newer boats often are built with air conditioning with little thought to passive ventilation. Large opening hatches and portholes are essential to being comfortable at anchor. The galley creates heat, steam, and food smells. While the heat can be welcome in cool climates, the steam will quickly raise the humidity and the potential for mold and mildew, and most of us don't want to wake up to the smell of last night's fish dinner. While you can add fans and wind scoops to make the most of the ventilation you have, adding or enlarging hatches and ports is much more expensive and tricky to do. The third item is whether the hot and cold area is logical. One of our biggest frustrations with Caetal, our first cruising boat, was the placement of the refrigerator. It was right next to the engine compartment and also right at the foot of the companionway where the sun beat down on it. I have no idea what it cost us in extra amps years, but I'm sure it was considerable. For some reason, older cruising boats tended to have the icebox, which was later converted to a refrigerator, right next to the engine, with not a lot of insulation in between. In later years, Tayana did revise the layout of the galley so the sink was next to the engine compartment and the refrigerator, or icebox, was on the other arm of the U, surrounded by air and out of direct sunlight. Even if you don't have refrigeration and just use a portable cooler, this can be an issue. Is there a cool and secure place to put the cooler? If you haven't done much cruising, it's easy to underestimate the importance of not wasting electricity for a refrigerator, or not wasting ice in a cooler. For us, using just 10% less power for the refrigerator would have meant that we could run the water maker twice as long each day. For others, it would mean less time running a generator. And for those using ice, it could mean an extra day or two before having to find a place to buy more, or do without. A couple more thoughts. Items 1 and 2, to me, are non-negotiable. The third one may not be 100% non-negotiable, but it's a very serious consideration. We didn't realize the serious flaw in the design of Catal's galley until after we were out cruising. Any boat is going to have trade-offs, and the biggest plus for Catal was that her previous owners had already spent a bundle of money and time upgrading her so that she was ready to cruise. Even knowing about the consequences of the refrigerator being next to the engine, we might still have chosen her. But I'm sure we would have looked harder at some other boats and not bought her quite so quickly. Researching galleys before we bought her, two items kept popping up. The need for a U-shaped galley and a double sink. Frankly, I disagree with both. The rationale for a U-shaped galley is that it provides a way for the cook to wedge him or herself in. I've seen plenty of U-shaped galleys with the open side towards the center of the boat, and no way for the cook to brace against the roll of the boat. I think the more important concern is that the cook can't be thrown too far. Galley work will never be 100% safe, but larger distances simply cause larger injuries. And I have absolutely no idea why someone would think that a double sink is necessary. I hated the one that came with Catal and replaced it. It was so tiny, I couldn't even put a plate in on edge diagonally. But the reality is that items such as this are relatively inexpensive to change if you decide you want something different than what the boat comes with. For us, it was less than $100. Even once you get past these items, there's plenty more to think about when you're buying a boat. But other items tend to be more obvious, such as the amount of storage, the type of stove, whether there's a refrigerator, and so on. Until next time, then.
Our aim at Street Invest is to put a trustworthy adult into the lives of street children so that they can support them in creating the most positive paths for their lives in the future. We work around the world, working on the street with the children where they are. For such a large group of children, the amount of funding available is tiny. Really, the funding that keeps organisations like Street Invest going comes from individual donors. Street children are the most abused, neglected, violated children, yet they are also the most resourceful, responsive, and resilient children that we could have the honour of working with.
For more information or to make a donation, visit streetinvest.org.